Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Roundtable. We are the spin-off podcast of the Film Stage Show. As you should know by now, during these episodes, rather than reviewing a film in depth, we will be tackling a broad range of discussion topics related to the whole of film culture. With me today, we have Amanda Waltz.
Hello, Brian.
Hello, Amanda. And we also have Bill Graham.
Woo!
All right. Now, before we begin, we want to extend an invitation to everyone out there to let us know what kinds of things you want to hear more about. If there's a particular bit of film news you want to know our take on. If there's a trend that you've noticed. If there's a cultural sea change in the wind that you think needs more attention, hit us up and we just might talk about it. Reach out. Your engagement is what makes this whole thing work. In fact, someone on Twitter asked us to talk about the rise and perhaps this year fall of Christian films coming to the cinemas and making a bunch of money. We may talk about that. I don't know if we have any more of those coming out this year. It would have been great to have this all thing started before God's Not Dead 2 came out.
Well, most of the Jesus, or not Jesus, is a
The Young Messiah?
Yeah.
And then, what's the one with Ewan McGregor?
Oh, yeah.
That's like some Nights in the Desert or something.
Yeah.
We really should have looked this up. I apologize. Anyway, that one is supposed to be great, though. So,
yeah,
that would be interesting to talk about. Because on the one hand, we have God's Not Dead's. And on the other hand, we have things like Noah, or The Last Temptation of Christ, or, controversially, Passion of the Christ.
Does Gods of Egypt not count? No?
That's not Christian.
Oh. Okay. Well,
just because it has God in the title doesn't mean that it's a Christian film.
Well, I thought the topic was deity like films, but
no.
Christian specifically,
because Christian films have, you know what, we're almost talking about it now. We're gonna save that. Rest assured, it is on the list now.
Okay.
One of the best ways you can get in touch with us, by the way, as you may know by now, is on the Twitter, where you can find us at Film Stage Show. You can also catch us on Facebook by searching The Film Stage Show. We're gonna start posting these topics beforehand so we can get y'all's take on it. So keep your eyes plastered there so you can be part of the conversation. Of course, if you really want to lay into us, you can also email us at podcast@thefilmstage.com. We also love feedback of all kinds. Tell us how we're doing. We've gotten a lot of encouragement about these roundtables, and we love receiving your comments and ratings on iTunes, so make sure to do that. And finally, you can also find the page that these episodes are posted under on thefilmstage.com, where you can comment if you so desire. And that's about it, I think. Right?
That's it.
Yeah. I don't have any specific comments. I know that we've gotten a bunch and people are excited and they like these. One man actually said that he wished we would spend more time on each topic. So maybe we'll think about cutting one topic so we can still keep these to an hour, but maybe have 30 minutes for each topic instead of 20. I don't know. We will think about it. I make no promises. But I don't have to make promises because I can very swiftly move us on to our first topic.
Uh-oh.
That topic is bigger, better.
Yes.
Oh. said like a woman.
Oh, Jesus.
You talk too much, you worry me to death. You talk much, you even worry my pet. You just talk too much.
All right, coming off of that horrifying thing that Bill just said, this is actually Bill's topic. We got word, and people have now been able to actually check out on demand that Zack Snyder has responded to criticisms that Batman v Superman was too long, too dark, and too muddled to be compelling by giving us more of it. The Ultimate Edition, which will be hitting the physical discs on July 19th, will be 30 whole minutes longer than the theatrical cut. Now, I know. Extended editions can be seen as cash grabs, as is often the case with unrated PG-13 horror re-releases. But sometimes, the extended edition will actually make a film better or at least flesh out some of the things left by the wayside. But are these releases a good thing? Shouldn't we see the best cut in theaters? We're here to talk about that now. So, Bill Graham, why don't you kick us off? What are some notable extended releases that you think have done a better job than what we saw in theaters?
Well, I think one film that kind of comes to mind for me in particular is the Alien 3 edition, and that's adds a little bit. It's not so much like, oh, it's got like 20 extra minutes. No, it's got about like 10 extra minutes.
And they also recut a lot of stuff. Like they reworked the entire film. In fact,
I think he worked it on the side and then basically submitted it to 20th Century Fox and was like, "Hey guys, like the theatrical version we released didn't do too hot. How about on a DVD we release this as well?"
There is a whole story about what had to happen to make his director's cut happen. And in fact, I very briefly had a side podcast called Movie Dare, where our listeners would dare us to watch movies that we had avoided or that were apparently awful. And we watched Alien 3. What a terribly named franchise. It's as bad as Fast and Furious. And
is it Alien? It is Alien 3.
It's Alien singular 3.
Oh.
And
dumb.
So
dumb.
They didn't call it more. They should have called it more aliens.
Even more aliens. But the funny thing is there's only one alien in Alien 3. So here's the thing. We, on my podcast, talked about that. My then girlfriend, soon to be fiance, now wife and mother of my daughter, was a guest on that, and she watched the
wrong
version.
That was the longest introduction for a human being I've ever heard in my life.
I had to give proper context. She watched the wrong version of that movie, so we were all super confused.
That is Daenerys Stormborn version of like title after title after title. Like, oh my god, stop that.
All right, but yes, so Alien Cubed, Alien 3, more Alien for your buck, was indeed cut better by David Fincher in that weird new release that they did.
Yeah,
Amanda Waltz.
Yes.
Did you have any ones that you wanted to bring up?
Well, that I thought was improved.
Yeah, I would love to start off with improved, and then we can slowly work our way down to ones that suck.
I'm not sure if I would say it's an improvement, but it's the one I saw in the theater was Donnie Darko. Because it was released in 2001, and then the director's cut was re-released in 2003. And I actually saw it in the theater, and I didn't think it was bad. It didn't clear up anything. I don't think it was supposed to. But it was, you know, I like the fact that it drove nerds a little more crazy as they tried valiantly to figure it out. It was nice to see it like in the theater, a different version of it. That's pretty much the only one I can really think of.
It's funny that you say it doesn't change anything. I mean, there are interstitials in that just outright explain certain parts of that movie that used to be really not explained at all.
Well, I think it makes it even more confusing, because isn't there a spaceship at one point, if I remember correctly?
There might be. I saw that once because my girlfriend in high school had never seen Donnie Darko, and she got the wrong version.
Oh, she got the cut?
She got the extended cut. So she's like, oh, that was interesting. I'm like, wow, that's a completely different movie. And you'll never know what it was like to sit there and watch Donnie Darko as like a 13-year-old and have your mind blown.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Here's the thing that's got to be mentioned is some of these directors have legendary kind of histories with extended cuts. And, you know, obviously, I don't want to turn this into the Zack Snyder podcast. Heaven forbid that.
Oh, God, no.
But he is definitely one of those people that he's got Watchmen, he's got Sucker Punch, and now he's got this film as well, where it's almost like, oh guys, hey, my 2+ hour film wasn't long enough. Here's some more that I really, really think add something to the film.
He's like a shit Chris Nolan, because Christopher Nolan will put out a 2 hour and 40 minute long movie, and that's like it. He's like, okay, that's it's done. It's a complete story. You got everything you need from it. And it'll have like ambiguities that are built in that people will flip out about, like the spinning top in Inception, mm-hmm. or what the hell happened at the end of Interstellar. But like, Zack Snyder's like, oh, well, you know, I could do that. And then he shoots too much. He doesn't realize that he's supposed to tell a story. And then he just hacks and slashes until it's 2.5 hours. And then says, it's cool. I'll be available for press conferences for the next 2 months to explain things. And then I'll try to put out an extended cut.
Sure. And it's funny because Warner Brothers specifically did a lot of damage control with some of the things they kind of leaked out to the press or did interviews. And not Zack Snyder or anyone actually directly involved in the film, but more like the producers and things, some of the people behind the film and even like higher ups at Warner Brothers were giving interviews basically saying, oh yes, there's this thing that happens in the film. I mean, I'm talking about Batman versus Superman. Oh, there's this thing that happens in the film. We didn't explain it, but we shot it. We edited it. It's going to be in like the longer cut. Let me go ahead and tell you about that. And it's like, no, dude. Like, this is the film you are releasing. You don't get to be like, hey, that thing that's confusing people, this is what's going on. That right. should have been explained in the film.
Now,
right?
a different thing about this is Kingdom of Heaven, mm-hmm. which is released on DVD.
That's the legendary version. Yeah. Right?
In the version that Ridley Scott had wanted, but that was contractually necessary to like get rid of. And it is a fucking great movie.
Hmm.
Not the theatrical version. The theatrical version is just like nothing but questions and people screaming speeches and
sure. Yeah. Like, all the character motivation from that film is cut out.
It is a firm example of what people constantly say when they're like, it feels like that action movie had all the character beats cut out. Watch the Kingdom of Heaven extended edition. That is literally what happened.
Yeah.
Like, there's an entire thing about, I think, like, the young child who's supposed to become king has, like, a blood disorder. He has hemophilia. That's just completely cut from the theatrical version.
Oh, wow.
And it's it's crazy.
This kind of brings up a question that I kind of want to pose to y'all. And it's one of those questions about, like, let's say reading a book before you see the film. Ooh. Like you can never go back and re-experience that, right? You can't switch that order at any time and re-experience it.
No, you really got to make a choice.
Yeah, you got to make a choice ahead of time. And so if for some of these films, let's say you're in our position, right? Mm-hmm. You want to kind of feel it out critically. You want to kind of get an idea of what was going on. Would you watch the longer cut first and then maybe like do some research, or, you know, hopefully the DVD or Blu-ray or whatever has like, hey, these are the deleted scenes that were added in so you can watch them after the fact and then figure mm-hmm. out, oh, wow, all that was missing? Wow.
Well, Bill.
Or do you watch theatrical release and then, I guess, suffer again and watch the whole thing?
Yeah, just hoping it's better. Yeah. Well, here's the thing.
Yeah.
I can say that it's usually difficult for us as critics to do this because we try to see everything as soon as it hits.
Sure.
But in the case of Margaret, which was the movie that came out a while ago from Kenneth Lonergan, I never saw it in its super limited theatrical run. And when it was released on DVD, it had the theatrical, I think, and it had the extended and I made the firm choice. I was like, I'm only watching the extended because I knew that he hated that film as it was released theatrically.
See? And really? And so what you experienced though was the version that A, he preferred, and B, critics preferred,
right?
But it wasn't the one that everybody necessarily reacted to.
Well, let's be real, Bill. No one reacted to that movie.
That is
true.
It was just crickets all around.
Yeah.
Well, that's. But I would say, Bill, to that question is, as a film lover, I will, if I know that a preferred cut is coming out from the director. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't, I kind of firmly adhere to the auteur theory still, but mm-hmm. I'm going to keep it. I'm going to keep that in mind. And I'm going to say, if we're getting the real deal, I'm not watching this watered down crap.
Sure.
Well, I mean, if we're talking,
there was a version of that, film. Oh, it was, Wong Kar Wai.
Oh, yeah.
What can I think of? Grandmaster, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That version. So
people were importing
was,
Blu-rays from like Hong Kong to see the version that he wanted to be seen.
Which, by the way, a lot of critics were basically saying the theatrical version released in the U.S. is complete and utter crap. Don't mm-hmm. see that. Go see, and therefore I've still yet to see this film, and I'm just like, damn it, because mm-hmm. I think it was released on Netflix as well,
yeah,
and even
right,
that version,
the bastardized version,
yeah,
was the cut down version, and I'm just like, why, like, even on Netflix, like, come on, bro, like Netflix and chill,
right,
and
you have the unrestrained storage space of the cloud, and you're still
yes.
like, yeah, let's give them the worst version. Amanda, it seemed like you were about to say something.
Oh, well, I was going to bring up Heaven's Gate because ooh. R.I.P.
Yes.
yes.
Kumino, right?
Yes.
Is it Kumino or Chimino?
I think it's Kumino.
I swear to God, I saw a documentary once that was narrated by Willem Dafoe, and he said Chimino, but it doesn't
really
matter.
Well,
yeah.
Well, it matters, but
I bow down to all things that Willem Dafoe says. So if that's the way he says it, then that's the way we'll go.
Thank you.
Well, and because we had discussed this before, and we were trying to figure out because when his film premiered, it got it notoriously got such a horrible reception, critical reception. I think the studio made him recut it, and he released it again. And
sorry, guys, let's try this again.
Yeah, and I feel like that's almost the opposite. Like he didn't let anyone in the editing room. He was a total tyrant during that entire shoot. Wanted the film his way. It was way over budget, way over schedule. And that was his version.
Yeah.
And so it's sort of the opposite being true of the studio coming in and saying, okay, you need to, this needs some improvement. But,
yeah.
Which is interesting. Oh, can I make a correction?
Yes, please do.
It said that actually Donnie Darko was re-released in 2004, which means I probably saw it in 2005 because knowing how long it takes things to get to Pittsburgh, so
it's got to come by old horse
saw
and buggy
it in 2005.
Yeah, so I'm gonna say I saw it in 2005, but yeah,
that
I didn't want any diehard.
That film seems a lot older than what it is. That's
now,
crazy.
Well, it came out in 2001.
I know, but
so,
but
yeah.
the Matrix
it is so
came,
far away ago.
Yeah,
long. In fact, that's the film that was one of the many films that kind of got shafted, if you will, by the occurrence of 9/11.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because people were like, "Ooh, plane falling on a suburban house.
Yeah.
We don't need that imagery."
Mm. Yeah, that was a big one.
I believe
I'm wondering
Boondock
if
Saints
yeah.
had a
yeah.
similar issue. I could be wrong about that, though, so don't quote me. That might have just been the fact that Troy Duffy was a maniac. Now,
yeah.
we've all kind of said that we are more interested in the cut that the director would prefer, correct?
I wouldn't even say that. I'm more interested. Like, I love the fact that for the most part, we get to sit back and basically let everybody else be a guinea pig because I don't want to spend an extra, like, you know, 3 hours of my life trying to figure out if something's worth it.
Well,
if I've already seen
Bill,
it.
If you can only see it once, I mean, like, if you have two discs sitting in front of you, which one are you going to pick?
I'm getting on the internet and I'm reading and figuring that out.
Well, here's,
like,
my question.
Right.
Okay.
Like, that's
I admire
benefit,
the shit out
right?
of you right now.
Well, I know that we brought up Blade Runner before. Can I ask?
How many cuts of Blade Runner are there?
There's so many.
There are five. Yeah.
So which... Which one is the one with the bad voiceover?
That's the one that was in the theaters.
See,
that's the one that was in the theaters?
That's the one that I watched, and that's the one
yeah.
that I fell in love with. Because I actually like...
You now, like the voiceover?
Well, hold on. There are two different voiceover versions as well. There's
one
where he talks extra long.
No.
Right, has even more voiceover. And there's one where he pops in and out, if I'm not mistaken.
Where he pops in and out.
Okay. See, yeah. And
I don't remember which one I saw. I know it didn't have voiceover, though.
See, the
voiceover one is so bad.
Yeah, you must have watched the final cut. So the final cut is kind of the one that's supposed to be legendarily, like, much improved. And, yeah, it cuts all the voiceover.
Like, the unicorn is more explained.
Yeah.
And so that one's bananas, because that one, you almost want to watch each version separately from each other. And again, that's an experience you just cannot have. So you almost cannot legitimately be like, oh, this version's better than that, because you'll always have the original version that you watched it. And unless you read up and know the entire story from beginning to end, that is going to be the original experience. So whether that was a good experience or a bad experience is going to pepper the rest of your experience every single time you watch that film.
Now, so what I want to know from each of you, have you both seen, so this is going to be completely different, because usually we're talking about, oh, the theater, they had to cut for time, or the production company wanted something different. Apocalypse Now.
Oh, I've seen Redux.
Right. It's a classic of cinema. And the director said, I want to do this again. Didn't just cut in new scenes apocryphally, this is what they say. They took all the original footage they shot and completely re-edited.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just a hack and slash job.
Right, it's not just like shoehorned in.
Right, it's not like Terminator 2 where they just plopped in that one where they took out his anti-human chip or whatever.
Yeah.
Now, what do we think about that? Because
I like the extended cut.
Do you like it more or less than the original?
Because
it's a lot longer.
It is a lot longer, and there's a lot more, I would say, dialogue. It's more dialogue
just
heavy.
That plantation scene alone.
Oh god, that plantation scene. Yeah,
and then the people talking with the bunnies.
Oh yeah, I think there's a lot to appreciate with both. It's sort of, I mean, because I watched it in a film class called Representations of Vietnam.
Okay,
so
that'll work.
Yeah, so it was a lot more, I feel like it was a lot more enlightening in that regard. But yeah, I think there's, you know, I think if you want, I almost want to say it's probably a little more, if you want something that's a little more, I don't know if I want to say action, leans toward action.
Yeah, that's the weirdest part, is like, you keep wanting to say like, oh, it's a little more action packed.
Not
it's a little
really.
More cerebral. No, it's just kind of more of what you liked in the first one, but depending on how much patience you have, that might be too much.
Well, I think the extended cut definitely takes away some of the mystique of...
It does.
Yeah, it does. I think
because the places they go are places where they pause,
right?
And it's like, okay, we're just going to talk to these French plantation owners. We're just going to hang out with these Playboy bunnies, and it's like you just stop, and there's
but
nothing
does,
there for the mission.
It does feel more like an odyssey. It does feel more like a journey. So yeah, it just depends on what you want. I think there's a lot to be taken out of both of them. I mean, they're both excellent films.
I agree. Bill, have you seen both of these?
I have not seen them. No, I've only seen Redux.
Oh,
so.
Okay. Whoa, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And you're never gonna watch the original because a critic that you respected said to watch Redux?
No, that's not the reason. The reason is I just don't have a lot of interest in rewatching that film.
Okay. It's, well, what if here's the thing? Like, I think you might like the original one better.
Well, here's the thing. I have a criteria for most of the time when I rewatch something.
You're not technically rewatching it. You're watching a different version.
This is true, but I'm okay. If I want to re-experience something in a different way, I usually try and have someone that hasn't seen it with me. So at least someone has like unfiltered, like, holy shit moments kind of happening. So I can
I can
be like, oh yeah, I like that energy. You know?
By the way, is another great idea for something we could talk about on this podcast is is the movie that you have like blindsided someone with?
And
we're not going to say anything. We're going to swiftly move on to the next topic because that is too good. That is too damn good.
Yeah. Save it. Put a pin in it.
Speaking of next topics, this next topic comes from Amanda Waltz.
Yes.
And it is called Lawsuits Are Free Promotion. Lawsuits are indeed free promotion. Wow. There's no such thing as bad press.
I do not get that music choice.
Well, the problem is that, like, what I chose it for is actually, like, in the middle of the song, and I didn't feel like queuing it up and just coming in the middle. But he's like, you know, I used to love to make you cry. It made me feel like a man inside. Now, we're talking about documentaries that have pissed people off. I recently spoke...
Well, the subjects.
Yes.
Yeah.
I've recently spoken with David Ferrier, who co-directed the film Tickled. The film tackles some truly weird, wonderful, and legally dicey subject matter. And you can hear both our review and my interview on iTunes or in your podcast feed. However, his story has wound up with him in the middle of at least one lawsuit. And we were curious how documentary filmmakers becoming legally embroiled or otherwise viciously adversarial with their subjects affects how we view their work. So, Amanda Waltz.
Yes.
As this is the subject that you chose, please kick us off.
So, oh, wait, this is... Oh, what is that? This is something that is not uncommon among documentary filmmakers, I found out. Quite a few big documentarians have had to deal with some lawsuits. Errol Morris, for example, has been sued a few times. He was actually sued by the gentleman who was exonerated by his film, The Thin Blue Line, Randall Adams, just because there were some, I guess, Adams believed that he was going to be awarded some compensation for his life story and being in the film. Also, he was also sued. I don't know if you guys have seen Tabloid.
No, I have not.
Oh,
I've heard of it.
You've never seen Tabloid? Oh, you guys need to go watch Tabloid right now. It's real good. He was sued by Joyce McKinney, who is the subject of that film, for defamation. He was actually sued by her twice. So that
Isn't
was
that double jeopardy.
No,
I'm
no.
just fucking with you.
Here's the thing, Bill. No. Lauren Greenfield, who directed Queen of Versailles, was sued by David Siegel, who was the subject of that film, and said that he sued for defamation, saying that the film ruined the reputation of his timeshare business, which was basically... ruined after the recession, so I don't know if there was much left to really defame.
It's funny because I don't want to derail it too much, but in fact, Leonardo DiCaprio is being brought into a lawsuit from Benihana,
really?
I guess the guy that owns Benihana, the guy that founded Benihana,
because of his drug smuggling ring.
Yeah, because of Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah.
And
oh,
so,
really?
And so, yeah, that's actually happening.
I
and
will
it's like,
allow that digression.
I'll allow it.
Because it is based on a real character and is based on like a true story and some of that. So, yeah, it's got kind of a... I mean, obviously, the film is very loud and bombastic, but, I mean, if you don't think that they were living that kind of lifestyle, you're out of your mind.
Well, Bill, while you're bringing up fiction, I'll also bring up Foxcatcher.
Oh, yeah, because it was the... I can never remember the wrestler's name.
Mark. Mark, I can't remember his name right now.
Yeah. Goodness.
Mark, I can't remember his name. He's all over Twitter talking about the fact that, like, nothing is real, this wasn't how it happened, and all this other stuff, and...
There's some homophobia behind
Schultz.
That.
Schultz.
Yeah, Schultz,
that's right. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, but it's, I mean, there's so many documentarians. Right.
But there's a difference between, like, you sold the rights to your life and someone else got insulted, or, like, you know, you're in a fiction film and you bring up something someone would rather forget. It's harder when it's a documentary.
Right.
Because presumably you have granted these people access, or at least know what's coming.
Well, I mean, there's so much there's so much paperwork you have to sign. There's so many, I mean, you're not signing away the right to your life story or anything like that, but you are giving someone legal permission to film you.
Yeah.
And so that's a safeguard against being sued.
This brings up something interesting. I was listening to a podcast talking with some comedians, and they were talking about how they were doing this live comedy kind of show where they basically run around in a bus with a glass window and they make fun of people on the street, or they tell people to do things on the street. And basically they were like, yeah, so we have to drive down the road. And the interviewer was like, and you have like a car full of lawyers trying to get disclosure agreements, right? And he was like, that's hilarious because you picked up on it. And he's like, but that's kind of what we have to do, is we basically have to roll down the street and behind us is a car with a bunch of people signing release forms like, hey dude, hey, can we actually use that footage and, you know, use your face and stuff like
well,
that.
Well, yeah.
Now, the same must be true for the Girls Gone Wild videos, correct? Anyway, serving us artfully back to the topic after that brief but important digression.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, so, like you were saying, Brian Ferrier and his filmmaking partner, Dylan Reeves.
Yes.
They're embroiled in a lawsuit that was brought on by the not willing subject of the film.
Sure.
Right.
Because this was a very investigative documentary. However, I don't know if he could ever really sue for defamation, because there's so much that happened in D'Amato's life, the person who...
Right, a lot of the stuff they talk about is public record.
It's public record, yeah, exactly. So, well,
and the other part of it is where someone is based, isn't... I mean, some of this has to be kind of... has to hold up in international court more than just like,
literally no idea how that works.
And I've taken media law and I honestly cannot answer that question.
How does this make us feel about the art itself? I mean,
well, is it a question of, does it make you question the legitimacy of the film? I mean, does it
usually
make
you, it makes me think that it's probably true.
Well, sure. And I think, too, because especially with Tickled, there are, and I've seen this, you know, on Twitter, and I think someone actually commented, on our episode, on our Tickled episode, saying that it's just, this is just basically catfish, you know, it's just sensationalized, and I wonder if, like, the lawsuit plays into that, and just the fact that this person is saying, you know, you forced me to be in this movie, although there are those weird guys definitely agreed to be in that movie.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, they totally did. But yeah, I guess I'm just wondering, like, if you've ever had an instance where it's made you question something like that, has made you question, because I don't know if it necessarily matters that they win the lawsuit, or if I think sometimes the lawsuit gets tied up in the court for so long that it's never, ever really resolved, or if it's settled out of court. I don't know. I mean, does it really matter? Does it just still make you question?
Well, it's funny because you bring this up, and the idea of a documentary, right, is that you're telling the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And there's exactly.
Yeah.
And there's this notion that people watch films based on reality, you know, based on a true story, and they get out of that film, and I'm talking about feature films, narrative films, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not documentaries, but actual, you know, theatrical films,
right?
And they get out of it and they kind of have this impression that, yeah, maybe some of that wasn't real, and yeah, maybe some of that was real, right? Okay, but you watch a documentary, and the general notion for most people is that most of the things in that documentary are based on fact, are real. And what you have to realize is that all of these directors are directing with an idea of what they want the film ultimately to be, whether it's while they're shooting it or whether it's once they get into the edit and they realize, holy crap, I uncovered something.
Well, and that was definitely the case with Queen of Versailles, because Queen of Versailles started out as just showing this eccentric family that was building the largest house in America. And then the recession hit and it became a completely different movie.
Sure. And that's what some people would argue what happened with Catfish and certain things like that. Right. And, you know, it's one of those things where you just have to realize that this is a perspective, whether how balanced and how much effort they put into it. Ultimately, this is a version of a story. It's not going to tell the whole story. And we've had this happen with Making a Murderer. We've had this happen with The Jinx. We've had this happen with Serial.
People were like fucking baffled to find out that The Jinx was like cut and edited.
Yeah.
And very weird.
Are you joking? Were people really?
No, they were piecing the timeline together, they're like, oh, like, you know, he made it seem like some of this stuff happened before this stuff in terms of like when their investigation happened and when they turned up a certain thing and what they had to do. But like the facts that they uncovered were still the same. And the final confrontation that left everyone speechless is still the same.
Right.
I mean, so it's like, did he have the thing during a certain point? And was there not really as much trouble getting him for a final interview? Who knows? Who cares? It's thrilling. Yeah. And at the end of the day, Robert Durst fucking murdered someone.
Right.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. So, yes, we will have the Mecca police come down on us.
Yeah, for whatever reason, we have to be much more careful with our allegedlies on this spinoff podcast than the original, because we have made some crazy claims
on the
film stage show. I feel like we have.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's just
about
that people don't think we're joking on this one.
We're reckless.
Yes, this is our documentary version. This is our documentary. That other one is just narrative feature film.
Now, I don't usually give a damn if someone's getting... I mean, I watch so few documentaries, and I know. I should watch more. But I just, like... Yeah, I don't really pay attention. I rarely know when someone is embroiled in a legal thing. When we decided this was going to be this topic, I said someone's got to do all the research for me, because I don't know.
We almost talked
about Blackfish, but then I said that movie was in recording...
Honestly, with Blackfish, my issue with Blackfish is that if you need a movie to tell you that it's not cool to keep a 2,000-pound whale inside a fish tank, then I don't know what to tell you.
Well. Oh, burn
what's that?
I said then you're not treating your mom well. Burn on Amanda.
I don't know.
I don't know if I take that extreme
of a stance, Amanda, because I think Blackfish, what it opened people's eyes is basically that no matter how much you do or say and kind of respect these animals, at a certain point, they just do not belong in captivity.
No, they don't. That's my point.
What it touches on more than anything is that these are mammals with feelings and things like that, and it kind of gets people to kind of understand that and realize that in a way that just telling them, hey, this animal is unhappy. Well, of course, it's big and it's in the small space. That makes sense.
Are animals ever truly happy? I mean, even when they're out in the wilderness, they're like, minds are basically like, I'm going to starve.
Sure. And I mean,
wow, we got off topic.
Our cats and dogs and things like that. Yeah, whatever.
I can tell you that my dogs are super happy.
One thing that I'm really surprised by is are some of these films that actually get released, because there are certain things like let's say Super Size Me, right?
Well, yeah, because Morgan Spurlock has definitely also been sued.
Yeah, well, I mean, he doctored the hell out of that.
Okay, but I mean, did they try and kind of do a cease and desist and kind of like stop that from being released? I mean, that's one of those films that I'm really curious about because,
right.
I mean, you're taking on, I mean, taking on SeaWorld is one thing. Taking on fucking McDonald's.
Ain't nobody give a shit about SeaWorld.
This is a dystopian future that we're talking about. It's like, you can take on the government. You can take on SeaWorld. You're going to take on McDonald's?
Yeah. It's true. It's true.
That plays into free speech laws, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's a big media law issue. But, I mean, you can still sue for defamation and you can still sue. Yeah. I mean, that's, you can still do that. I mean,
I'm just going to say that I'm pissed that I can't get supersized fries anymore.
Oh, Brian, no. Gross. Yeah.
I mean, like, literally just a thing of supersized fries. Like,
you can
drunk.
Get, like, a tape at McDonald's. You can get basically, like, a basket of fries. I don't think you should.
If that were true, do you think that I wouldn't do that?
No, it is true. You can get a basket of fries at McDonald's.
Yeah, a literal basket.
A literal basket.
We are off topic, but please, people out there in Twitter land, tweet me a picture of a literal basket of fries from McDonald's.
They're to share.
Yes, of course. But I would love for three of our Twitter followers to get together and share a basket of fries. Tweet at us with the hashtag the fries stage show.
Don't.
if you can't figure out a way to get two orders of fries, Brian, I don't know what you're doing.
What am I gonna do? Say I would like two? Oh my god, you're right. Anyway, back to the original.
Could you shove them as hard as you can into one container, though?
Right. I want to believe. Just take the bag that you put a kid's meal in and fill it with all the fries. So. I don't care if someone's getting sued. Now, if this lawsuit is successful,
right,
and it turns out that everything was a lie, that's great. But up until the point where that happens, if a person takes the time to make a lawsuit happen, I'm, for some weird reason, assuming that they're guilty.
That kind of goes back to only guilty people lawyer up and kind of stuff like that. But here's my deal.
True, Bill.
Is
I'm joking.
So there are two possibilities here. There is the possibility that you hear about the lawsuit and all of a sudden it's like, ooh, your interest is up, right? So by bringing the lawsuit, they're doing the one thing that they don't want to happen. They're bringing more attention to it.
Right.
The second thing is, if it's successful, then all of a sudden you're like, oh damn, now I definitely want to go watch that documentary, which is exactly what they don't want again.
I would love to see
that
pile of lies.
There is just a lose-lose situation for them to like take any kind of legal action unless they can get that stuff either stopped from being released. I think there was a rumor that Disney was going to try and stop the release of
Tomorrow.
Yes,
Escape from Tomorrow.
Escape from Tomorrow.
Oh yeah, Escape from Tomorrow.
And that was kind of interesting.
Escape from Tomorrow, Tomorrowland, and World of Tomorrow. There's too many tomorrows.
Too much,
guys.
We need Escape from Yesterday, the story of defeating Trump. They didn't do anything because they didn't want to draw attention to it, and that movie was garbage. So
it wasn't great.
Yeah, it was, like I said, it was garbage.
It was interesting the way that it was kind of done, right? Like the story behind it is almost more interesting than the film itself.
Well, it's very 100%. Yeah, it's very gimmicky. Like, it's a total, yeah, that's the biggest draw, like you said. And I think that is, like you said, and actually it's funny because Joyce McKinney, who is the subject of Tabloid, because we're obviously talking about how much attention Tickled got from the subject showing up at premieres and basically making a huge scene. But Joyce McKinney of Tabloid did the same thing, where she was going to to screenings and booing the film and making a scene. And yeah, it is. It's true. I mean, if you just left it alone, because obviously Errol Morris isn't, you know, nobody's like clamoring to the theater.
Yeah. To wrap this up, as much as Errol Morris deserves that.
Yeah, he's great, but it's just true.
To wrap up this particular subject, I'm just going to say, before we flip on to the next one, that I actually brought that up with David Ferrier, and I was like, mm-hmm. if if they hadn't responded to you like a crazy person, you never would have looked into this more. And he's like, yeah, no, if they had just said, oh, I'm busy today, I'll like call you tomorrow, and then never called, I probably would never have followed up. So, like, there is something weird about that, and it makes it more interesting, and again, it makes me believe these people are guilty. And I know that that is the opposite of everything that this fine democracy of ours stands for, but that's just how I feel.
Well, you're not a jury member, so, no, that's true. You know,
I can prejudge people till the day that I die, as long as I'm not on a jury. Speaking of dying...
Well, now I'm just thinking back, and I'm thinking back and hoping I said thin blue line and not thin red line.
You did.
You did. You did.
Did I say thin blue line?
You said thin blue line.
Okay, thank God.
I'm glad that for some reason we have instilled in us a massive fear on this show only about saying exactly the right thing. Again, speaking of dying.
Yes.
Topic number three. If you die first, I am definitely going to eat you. Amanda, do you understand why I chose that particular song?
Don't Fear the Reaper?
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes way more sense, Brian.
All right. If you die first, I am definitely going to eat you. This weekend saw an incredible number of filmmaker deaths. We had Michael Cimino, or Camino, or Chumino. We haven't figured it out yet. Abbas Kiarostami and Robin Hardy. Now, as we all grow older... it's inevitable that our favorite directors are going to die someday. Most likely before us. In fact, the title of this topic comes from the film Ravenous, which was directed by Antonia Bird, who passed away in 2013.
Did he really?
Her?
Oh, I didn't know that.
Her.
Oh, shit, her.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. No. What did I say?
You said he.
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to do that.
Good Lord, Amanda.
R.I.P. Sorry.
You freaking damn well ought to be. Anyway, so my question, this is a super morbid ending topic, but it should be fairly fun. Bill, Amanda, who is the director living right now who would hurt you the most to lose, and why?
Damn it.
Yeah, right?
This
is a super, super dark thing to bring up. But I was thinking about it because, and I'll preface this to give you both some time to talk.
It's easy for me.
Okay, well, that's good.
It's easy for you? Okay.
I was going to say, like, people, like, I'm trying to think of the nice way to say this. People were greatly affected by the loss of Prince.
Mm-hmm.
And I was aware of his passing, and obviously I enjoyed his music, but I didn't shed any tears. I didn't feel like something that I enjoyed had been stripped from my life. We still have the music that he made, and honestly, I don't follow music enough to be excited for what's going to happen next with any music artist. It's just something I am. However, filmmakers. Now there's someone who's going to hurt me. Abbas Kiarostami hurt a lot because I have loved beyond words the last two films that I saw. And Robin Hardy hurt a little bit, even though I heard The Wicker Tree wasn't that good. But his work on The Wicker Man, the original, was amazing and unlike anything else you'd ever seen. Michael Cimino, the man was in director's jail. I don't know that he's done
but he
anything
gave us,
recently.
He but gave he, us Deer Hunter.
Right, he gave us, like, Deer Hunter.
I mean,
right,
yeah.
And he gave us the marvel, that the gift that keeps on giving, Heaven's Gate. Yes. And so I started thinking, like, that's when it's going to hurt for me. You know, a lot of people will cry over Michael Jackson or Prince, but I'm going to cry over film directors. I will hold off on saying which one of mine specifically. Bill Graham, you said this was easy. Who are you going to cry over?
Well, let me preface this by basically saying, look, if you're a living artist, you have... There's kind of this notion in life of what do you leave behind, right? And so many people that are doing a 9-to-5 job literally will not have anything that really lasts beyond, you know, their family members and maybe relatives and things like that. And that's kind of a shitty way of looking at life. But I think you know, it's ultimately true.
Putting us all in our place.
I mean, you know,
I have a daughter now, you asshole.
Hey, this is the world we live in. And we kind of wonder what we're leaving behind. And thankfully for some of these artists, they're leaving behind something that people will, you know, even if you make really shitty movies, a lot of those movies end up as DVDs, as Blu-rays, and whatever is going to end up, maybe everything is just going to be digital and it's going to be on digital. And so ultimately someone can look up, whether you're a poet, whether you're a writer, whether you're a photographer, any of these things where you basically put something out into the world, right? You're exporting stuff out of your head, you know? These are things that ultimately people can watch, and sure, for sure, you know, we have the Kubricks of the world. We have people like this that have passed away and leave a legacy of films that people will continue to discover for generations and generations.
But one of the currently living directors who dies will make you cry? We don't need to do a giant thing about the people who have already died.
Sure.
Also, I think Kubrick's still alive.
No, Kubrick is dead.
Oh, not Kubrick. Jesus.
I said Kubrick.
I thought for some reason I was...
Anyways.
I need to know who Amanda thought you were talking about.
I am fucking
out. Who did you think he was talking about?
I thought he was talking about Coppola. I don't know why I heard Coppola, not Kubrick.
No.
Sorry.
No. Bill, this is true. Everyone will leave a legacy. But I want to know, who has the potential? Who's still going now? Who, when they die, you will say, I wanted to see whatever that guy had coming.
It's Guillermo del Toro.
Okay.
So this is a guy that, in and out of film, I just absolutely adore. I think this is a guy that if you've never listened to an interview with him, if you never listened to a podcast with him, if you never
gotta follow him on Twitter.
Oh my God, he's great on Twitter.
He's so great on Twitter.
If you just don't follow this guy's life outside, like, you may not even like his films. He is hilarious, and he says a lot of the things that a lot of people wish they would. He's very honest and open. A lot of people say, you know, oh, this guy wears his heart. No, this guy wears his heart on his sleeve. Like, he is passion, passion, passion. And it is infectious to kind of be around and listen to. I can't imagine, you know, the kind of film sets that he's on and what they feel like, because I can't see this guy getting angry at anybody, and yet I see so many demented and crazy things coming out of his head that it's kind of scary. He is
a big cuddly teddy bear full of spiders.
Yes, and it is scary to realize that, you know. This guy has a few films that, I mean, Pan's Labyrinth is definitely top five. Like, I doubt it will ever be superseded. And part of that is when I saw the film, it was very young and kind of my film watching kind of, I chose to see that as an adult. And that was one of the first real decisions of looking up the critical reaction to that film, seeing that it was high and knowing absolutely nothing about the film, nothing about the director. I didn't know who the hell this guy was. And the film is in Spanish. And so I drugged my parents to go see this film in a theater with subtitles, and it blew me away at the time. Mm-hmm. And so part of that is that experience that will always stay with me. But part of that is just, I think the film is gorgeous. I think it's beautiful. The music, the cinematography, and damn it, he's one of the few directors that still understands blending CGI with practical effects. Yeah. That film is a perfect example of
it. Not just that, but blending genres too.
Yeah,
he loves mashing it up. And this is a lot of people you know, have looked at films like Pan and looked at films like all these remakes where they keep trying to reimagine all these stupid fairy tales and like tell them in a darker, kind of sinister way. No, this dude knows what the hell he's doing.
He also really believes in magic.
Yeah, he does. It's
sure.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And that translates into his films.
Right. When that man dies, hopefully many years from now, but to tie it in with the topic, when that man dies, we truly will have lost a singular vision, and whatever films that he had in him will never be created by anyone
right.
else.
Sure.
Now, Amanda Waltz.
Yes.
What is a director, or who is a director, I should say, who, upon their passing, you will feel deeply sad to have lost, and why?
Oh, Werner Herzog.
Oh, my God.
Mm.
Yes. Dude.
If only because of his cameos in popular television shows.
and film.
He's
Jack Reacher.
He is such a singular human being in so many ways. I mean, there will never be another Werner Herzog.
Sure.
And just what he does with films. And I mean, going back to talking about documentaries and how much he plays with the formula of documentaries, and just, it's almost sort of, what's the term I'm looking for? It's like narrative nonfiction. What's the term I'm looking for where it's sort of like David Sedaris, where it makes you question.
Yeah,
what's that?
I don't know. It's like a essay, but I don't know.
Where it's supposed to be his life, but it's not. It's very obviously embellished.
Yeah,
that kind of thing. Where it's like Werner Herzog definitely does that, and it's great. I mean, he gets away with it because he is not trying to. I mean, he's trying to discuss these huge themes and be so philosophical just about everything all the time. And in order to do that, you have to sort of not settle for reality.
Yeah.
He
loves the truth so much that he won't let the truth get in the way of telling it.
Pretty much.
It's sure. insane.
Is that truthiness? So is that what
yeah,
that
means? Yeah, a little extra truthiness by getting rid of the truth. Would anyone be upset if I played my favorite Werner Herzog like clip right now?
No.
Okay, great. Do you all watch Rick and Morty?
Unless he died.
Not in a while.
Okay, this is from a show called Rick and Morty.
Rick and
it's
Morty.
Amazing, and this is Werner Herzog as an alien explaining human culture.
Yeah, but I mean...
No, forget it. I told you this was a waste of time.
Have respect, Yarp. The Earthman's world is tiny and undeveloped. He knows nothing of the genocides of Chlorgon or the tragic events of 65.3432.2314.
And even if he did, he wouldn't comprehend them. I've dwelt among the humans. Their entire culture is built around their penises. It's funny to say they're small. It's funny to say they're big. I've been at parties where humans have held bottles, pencils, thermoses in front of themselves and called out, "Hey, look at me, I'm Mr. So-and-so Dick. I've got such and such for a penis." I never saw it fail to get a laugh.
All right, that's enough. You guys are...
That is the amazing,
great.
Amazing Rick and Morty.
I don't want him to die.
And yeah, for his ability to do stuff like that, and then his weird turn as like a real estate agent on Parks and Recreation, in addition again, his lack of concern for reality getting in the way of the truth. Yeah, there's really no one else like Werner Herzog out there.
And he was in Pittsburgh recently filming Lo and Behold.
Oh, because it's supposed to
be
a wasteland?
What's that?
Did he get lost? I asked if it was like for his like musing at the end about how the internet will destroy the world and it's a post-apocalypse.
Yeah. Well, he was here. No, because there's a huge robotic scene here in Pittsburgh, and he was here playing with the robots at CMU.
Of course he was.
And that's just, there's an amazing clip of him with this very young CMU student who built these robots. It's a robot soccer team that are meant to build, like, defeat the FIFA World Champions. And it's just this little, I mean, it doesn't.
That's easy. All they have to do is just kick everybody in the shins.
Oh, like, done.
Fuck you, soccer.
Soccer fan here. Soccer hooligan. But yeah, so they're just these little, like, cylindrical robots. There's really nothing, like, that special about them. But this kid's holding his robot. And he's like, yeah, you know, I spent a lot of time on it. And I really like it. And he's like, do you love it? And the kid's like, please, yeah, I guess I love it.
I guess I'm in love with the thing.
It's so wonderful.
I have to say that his voice does weird things. It both annoys me and it fascinates me.
Because he's a very literal person.
But he's also so monotone that it almost drives me.
But it's a voice unlike any voice you've ever heard, Bill. Welcome to McDonald's.
What it
would you like a basket of fries with that?
See, and you're
getting into Irish territory.
I know. I don't know how I went Irish.
You're also getting into Austrian territory because that sounds vaguely familiar to Arnold Schwarzenegger, which is what I was going to say.
He
sounds like a incredibly intelligent and thoughtful Arnold Schwarzenegger.
You want to take him so seriously.
That's just like the voice that I hear every single time. Just like, oh, wow.
I wish that I had time to play another clip of his, because he has a clip from Jack Reacher where he talks about, like, chewing off fingers.
He's the villain in Jack.
Yeah, he's the main
bad
guy.
So crazy.
I will wrap us up by saying that my director, who, this is going to be super dark. When I was a younger man, I used to want to kill myself real bad. And one of the things that kept me going was that I knew that Terrence Malick was coming out with a new film.
Wow.
And that could be a long time, Brian.
I know.
So yeah,
that's the hilarious part. It's not like I was waiting for the new Taylor Swift album.
Yes.
I was waiting for a Terrence Malick film. That film was The Tree of Life. That film was like 7 years after The New World. And now he's releasing a new film every year. At that point, I was like, you know, I really can't die before Terrence Malick does, because I don't care about my friends. I don't care about the world at large. What I care about is the artistry and creativity and the vision and the spirituality of Terrence Malick. So,
he's coming out with movies all the time.
Right, because of his drag-ass attitude on Tree of Life, I Stayed Alive, in addition to just generally getting better. But yeah, I feel like the day that I open up Twitter, because let's be real, that's how we found out about all these things. The day that I open up Twitter and find out that Terrence Malick has passed, I'm going to have to, like, take a day off of work. I'm going to have to, like, go lay in my backyard and stare up through some trees.
Terrence Malick would want.
Yeah, exactly. Just, like, compose, like, rambling tweets that just are, like, asking, like, why the clouds cover the sun. Don't they know the sun is more powerful than any other force in our solar system? And it's just going to be weird. It's going to be super weird, because for so long he wasn't even creating, but he was out there. And, like, the promise of him was there, and now he's in this, like, weird sort of, like, punk rock for Terrence Malick stage where, like, all of his stuff is super weird, and like, a lot of people who love Days of Heaven hate it, but I'm just like, man, Terry still got it. Like,
oh, Days of Heaven. Yeah,
his, like, Terry still got it.
Hashtag Terry still got it. So we have a thing on this show about calling artists by some absurd shortened version of their name. So I don't want to hear about it.
I didn't call Guillermo anything.
What would you call him?
GDT?
GDT?
I mean, I wouldn't,
by the way, his Twitter handle
loud.
At RealGDT. So.
Jerry Bull. Jerry the Bull.
Jerry the Bull. Actually, Guillermo is, I believe, Spanish for William, so it should be Willie the Bull.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, Willie the Bull. There we go.
So I can call him Billy, right? I can call him Billy?
Could we call Werner Herzog V-Hog?
He'd probably like that.
That probably would. But yeah, Terrence
I'm
going to
call
him
Werner Schwarzenegger.
Werner Schwarzenegger. Yeah, it's I really honestly don't know what will happen when we lose Terrence Malick. He's up there. I don't know. He seems like he's more alive now than he has been in a while. So I've got my fingers crossed. I got my hope.
I think he'll
live to be 150.
We got several generations here picked between us because Guillermo's kind of on the young side and Herzog is kind of up there, and then Malick's like right in between, isn't he?
I think
Malick's older. Guillermo del Toro is currently 51.
I think. Oh, Terrence is pretty old. He's got to be.
Malick is currently 72.
Yeah.
Would Herzog like to
guess?
Be.
I mean, Werner Herzog is ageless, but would anyone like to guess what his corporeal Earth form is?
66.
73.
No. Whoa! No, I was going to say, yeah, he's in his 70s, definitely.
Okay, so I was close.
Can I just throw one thing out there? Have you ever heard him talking about how he didn't know that John Waters was gay?
Who, Herzog?
Yeah, Herzog.
I thought he was just a flamboyant man.
he gives this wonderful, he's just at a talk, and he's talking about how he and John Waters have been friends for decades. And he never knew he
was
gay.
I guess not very close.
That's such a Werner thing to do.
Like, it's
just
wonderful.
Just never even bring it up. Like, it just never comes up.
I think he says something to the effect of, I'm very literal. When I see a man, I see a man. I don't see a straight man. I don't see a gay man. I just see a man. Bless your heart, Werner.
I love Werner Herzog. All right, well, Werner Herzog, Terrence Malick, Guillermo del Toro, please stay alive. For the good of all of us.
Yes.
So that is it for today. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us.
Well, hey. So, potential topic, if any one of these pass away.
Oh, my God. Oh, Bill, why the fuck would you even say that?
Well, I'm just
saying. Are you
saying,
dooming these people, Bill?
I'm just
what
saying.
What if they all started dying one by one?
Oh, no. I would be convinced that Bill is a sorcerer if they all...
I would too. So that's all for
As
this
I
episode of
mustache.
The Film Stage Roundtable. Let us know what you thought of our fucking bananas thoughts and opinions by finding us on iTunes, reaching out on Twitter at Film Stage Show, or Facebook by searching for The Film Stage Show. And of course, going to filmstage.com and commenting on the episode page. If you have any ideas for topics you want to hear about, tweet them at Guillermo del Toro and tell him to tweet them at us, or you can just use those previously mentioned methods to contact us. Speaking of contacting us, let's tell the people where we can be found online. Bill Graham.
You can find me at I didn't have enough time to be clever at CableBFG on Twitter, and you can find me writing on freshfiction.tv and The Film Stage. We have a pretty bomb ass sci-fi feature gonna be hitting soon too.
In honor of Star Trek Beyond. Mm. And Waltz. Mm-hmm. What about you?
You can find me on Twitter at Media Waltz. You can find me also Media Waltz on Letterboxd, and you can find my blog Steel Cinema on WordPress.
And just in case anybody wants to kind of tweet at Amanda or maybe send her an email or whatever, her number one movie in all time, The Mist.
Oh my God, though.
The Mist.
Oh God.
Share your Mist fan fiction with Amanda.
I would actually enjoy some Mist fan fiction.
Oh. What?
I enjoy any fan fiction.
Oh, okay.
I don't know that I fully understand what you're saying right now.
I don't know if I do either.
All right. Well, I can be found on Twitter
Jesus,
Brian J. Rowan. You can follow me on Instagram at Brian J. Rowan if you want pictures of my beautiful new daughter. And you can find me. What was that?
I said you cannot have them.
No,
the pictures
can't.
Of your beautiful new daughter.
No, they're mine. What was the other thing I was going to say? Oh, right. I write for The Film Stage at thefilmstage.com. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us, and tune in next time. Now it's time to leave.